game for maybe they knew I was really into it, right? I'm into every game, but this one just has pissed me off on many different levels, to be quite honest. So, I just know how we run our business, right? And I'll stand on that, right? So, like, I love the way our guys fight, the way they practice, the way they prepare. I love the way coaches coach. I love the way they recruit. I love the way they develop. And to get this win was a big deal.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the voice of Illinois head coach Brett Bielema. Coach Bielema joins us right now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Coach, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good, Mully. That was a great plug for the tire business there.
I'm here for you.
Yeah.
So listen, you know, I loved watching the game last week because it was so much more difficult than we thought it would be going in. But that's called a rivalry game, right? When you have a rivalry with another team, oftentimes it's not going to go the way everybody thinks it should go or what. And I feel like it's the same thing with Michigan this week. You guys are at home to Michigan. You personally have done well against Michigan in your career. I think you're 500 against them, dating back to losing to Lloyd Carr in your first game there when you were at Wisconsin. I'm just curious, is there such a thing? Are certain games more rivalry games than other games in a Big Ten season?
You know, I think once you're in it, I don't know how much there is difference. I think in this conference, in the Big Ten conference, you know, in 1988, my first year as a player, to now 2024, my current year as a head coach. Like, I know sometimes teams go as scripted or plays, or, you know, games go as scripted, but I really preached to those guys last week. You know, we're playing a Purdue team that obviously hasn't had a lot of success, and, you know, I just showed them, you know, during the course of the year on how to play the game. We talk a lot about HTP, which is how to play the game. And, you know, I think in Big Ten play, there's going to be those games that maybe get a little sideways, but there's a lot of them that get sideways and then come back, get tight. And that's what we saw Saturday. Michigan, you know, they play pretty scripted. You know, they're one of the few teams when you break them down, you know, early down is about 75% of their plays. Third down is about 20 to 25% of their plays. And then they'll have an occasional fourth down in there. So they play pretty much as scripted. They're a really good football team with good players.
Great to talk to you, Coach. So last week, if you were ticked off, how would you describe your mindset this week going into a game where you're 3-point underdogs despite playing at home and being the higher-ranked team?
You know, it's probably, I think, one thing I've learned in this business, it's about what the game is, right? But there are still people that are heavily influenced by things of the past. Michigan is obviously a 4-2 team, but when you watch them on film, I mean, Texas got a little away from them, but they played really well throughout the course of the year. They've been settling in. I think they got their quarterback answered now. They're very efficient. Their new defensive coordinator is an NFL guy I've known for a while that they play very aggressive, and they got good players all around them, so it's going to be a tremendous challenge.
When you look at the different parts of the schedule, I mean, we were talking about this idea that this is a big game. This is the national champions, defending national champions. This is a team coming into your place. You don't have, you're not favored in the game, which is an insult to you, whether you accept it as such. And then you got Oregon in the offing. So you get to play this game, and they're coming off a bye week, which is always a difficult thing. How do you? I mean, it's got to be Michigan and Michigan and Michigan, right? But there is this team out there too in another week where you're heading to Eugene, Oregon. It's tough to keep the kids from looking at the schedule.
You know, again, probably on the outside world, Molly, but like our guys, I know the outside world thinks we're 5-1. All our guys try to do is go 1-0 every week. And I know some people are going to say, oh, Coach Peak, but it's just how our guys work, right? Like, you know, to beat Purdue, we had to do a really good work day on Sunday, a really good day of prep on Monday, and then we went to work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Michigan's the same thing. You know, we're going into our Thursday practice here in about an hour and a half. We start our meetings today at 7 a.m. We start the same way every day. And you know, Michigan, even though this game is, you know, two ranked teams, this hasn't happened in Memorial Stadium since 2000. It was the last time two ranked teams played on this field together. Josh Whitman, who you guys know, our AD, who I love to death, he was a senior in college when that happened, right? So it's been a while. I've been trying to preach to our guys, to our fan base, let's make this game, you know, everybody has to play. When you go to play at Michigan, you got to prepare crowd noise, right? I would love for us to have Memorial crowd noise advantage, right, and put ourselves in a position to be talked about. This game also marks a 100-year anniversary, 100 years and one day to when Red Grange ran for six touchdowns. Well, he scored six touchdowns against Michigan in the opening game of this stadium 100 years ago, right? So there's a lot of things that went into today before today ever happened that you know, I want to have those people have success as well.
So you mentioned Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator from Michigan. He replaces Jesse Minter, who went with Harbaugh to the Chargers. And under Wink Martindale, I think they're more aggressive. I'm not quite sure, Coach, what the numbers show, but they'll blitz you. And you have a veteran quarterback in Luke Altmyer who might be prepared for that or well-equipped to handle that. But how are you preparing for that? And do you expect them to come at you with everything?
You know, David, their back end is very talented. You know, they got a corner that is probably one of the best in the country. They got some active safeties, but you're exactly right. They bring multiple pressures from different looks. You know, with his background in the NFL, they really understand matchup problems and issues. They try to not only create matchups on the perimeter, but also one-on-ones with guards and tackles. They bring a variety of different looks. They do run multiple coverages, so they try to keep the advantage, you know. I think a lot of defensive guys, you know, try to play what the offense does, and that's definitely not the case with Wink. He wants you to play his game plan, right? And we got to be advantageous. We got to take advantage of the moments. When you're playing a team like Michigan, you got to capitalize on the moments you can. And when there's a good play for them, you got to get out of those tough moments and react properly.
Caden Feagan is obviously your leading rusher. He missed last week. Is he ready to go?
No, Molly, he's unfortunately probably going to be gone, not only this game, but for an extended period. But the good news is I went into this season, you know, as deep as I've been since I've been here at the running back room. Caden didn't even start our opening game because Aiden Loffrey did, who we thought was our best back, right? And then Caden took over. But then last week, Josh McCray scored three touchdowns. You know, Josh ran for 700 yards as a true freshman 3 years ago. Unfortunately, had two back-to-back years where he was cut short with a kind of a season-ending type injury. And then we got this young man, Khalil Valentine, freshman, that has come on. So those three guys, you know, have really been impressive. Super excited about them. You know, when I won my first Big Ten championship up in my previous life at Wisconsin, I had four running backs, John Clay, Monty Ball, James White, and Melvin Gordon. Those guys all went on to play in the NFL, first-rounders through fourth-rounders. And this room kind of reminds me of that. They're all kind of different sizes, different skill sets. When you have multiple backs that cover different skill sets, that's when you got something, and I really like this room.
You know, you look at Michigan offensively, they have the typical offensive line that Michigan has a tradition for having. They also average 191 rushing yards per game. They may have their issues at quarterback, Coach, but you know that they're going to be able to run the football, or at least try to. What's the key in stopping the run game?
You know, for us in this league especially, I think the championship teams do three things. They run the ball, they defend the run, and they cover kicks. And they can do all three of these. They do a really good job defensively and obviously in special teams, but offensively they're heart and soul. You know, anytime your head coach is a former O-lineman, O-line coach, you're going to have this principle, right? They do a really good job of running the ball effectively on early downs. Like I said earlier, these guys are pretty scripted in what they do. They know early down success is based off first down success, and they're really effective on first downs when they have success. That's what they're doing. So they put themselves in third and manageables, and it's a lot of it based on exactly what you said. All the run game has been something they believe in, and they do very, very well.
Do you like playing games off a bye week? They're coming off a bye week. Does that give them an advantage, or do you think sometimes people can get a little distracted when they're not playing?
You know, it's probably a little bit a case study. I think if you really look at people, like, you know, we obviously know Michigan's coming off a bye, but this is Coach's first year as a head coach, so there's not a lot of track record there. I'm assuming they probably will do things very similar to what Michigan did in the past. And, you know, he's been around some really good coaches and programs with his history. For me, in my 16 years as a head coach, we've done pretty well off of bye weeks. We do, in our emphasis is about getting our good players rested and maximizing the growth of our second and third string guys. But how Michigan handled their business in the bye week, I don't know. But I do know you know, just reading from their players and their coaches, they've been preparing for this game and understand the environment and the team we're playing. So a lot of respect, hopefully, on both sidelines. Should be a great Big Ten football game. And, you know, this is one of the traditional matchups, right? Like, I think people are probably sitting downtown Chicago trying to figure out when USC Penn State play, if that's a Big Ten game or a non-Big Ten. So it's a different time. It's a really exciting time. And just like next week when we go to Oregon, right, that's going to be new on other people's schedule. But the only game we're worried about right now is Amazing Blue of Michigan.
You mentioned the 100-year anniversary. You mentioned the Red Grange commemoration on Saturday. You are also wearing throwback uniforms. Not going to lie, Coach, I'm not a big fan of throwback anything in terms of uniforms. Did you help pick them out? What do the players think about wearing them?
Well, I think you know me well enough, right? I had 0.0 input on the design. But I will say this, our guys, I kind of like them. They're true. Our equipment guy, Jake Roche, is incredible. And found a guy that hand-painted these helmets, the jerseys, the pants, the combo, the blue shoes. It's really a pretty awesome look. You won't recognize us on Saturday when either in the stadium or on TV. You won't see that as an Illinois uniform. But, you know, one time a year, and I mean, how many times you get to celebrate 100 years, right? And to have this moment, I'm kind of a purist traditionalist, so it was definitely something I had to be coaxed into. But I know, so even our athletic director, Josh Whitman, to get this game to be here, there was a lot of conversations that had to happen to get Michigan here on the 100-year anniversary. So I thought a lot went into it. And to have, I know our players are excited. We put the uniforms on, practiced them Wednesday. Just because we look so different, I didn't want our quarterback getting shocked by the guy he was throwing into coverage, right? So
that's a great
there's a lot goes into it. And I remember 2011, my first Rose Bowl with Russell Wilson, we were playing Oregon, and they had chrome helmets. And they were really shiny in the daylight, right? And I'm like, well, this is going to jack us up. And Russ is like, a lot of times I throw to a helmet, Coach. And I'm like, oh, man, right? Like, I lost that battle. They got to wear the damn chrome helmets. But what I did hear in my head was sometimes quarterbacks only see helmets. So when we're going out there in a brown old-school leather helmet, we put those in and practiced in them all week. And then I started looking at jersey. I'm like, well, ooh, that don't look like a normal orange and blue or white jersey. So we started practicing offensively for sure Wednesday on, just because I don't want our quarterback seeing something new on Saturday. So it's been a fun week. Guys are locked in. I'm really excited for it to get here.
That is really interesting, because that does happen. There are various teams over the course of different sports where suddenly you're wearing a different uniform and you no longer recognize. It's almost like there's an invisibility factor. It's a really smart thing to do. I hadn't thought about that, Coach.
You know, I didn't get here by chance. I just really enjoy this team. Like, you know, as you pointed out, the Purdue game, you know, we were up, I believe, 27-3 maybe at one point. Right. And, you know, then to flip the script and have it. And, you know, I thought in the biggest moment, it's overtime. And, you know, I grabbed Tanner Ark and everybody throws four guys out there for the coin toss. But I want my guys talking to their coaches. So I just sent one guy out. I told Tanner what we were going to do. If we want to toss, we want to be on defense. If they win, they're going to want to be on D, and we're going to defend the student section. And I wanted my other guys to go talk, because I told them, I said, hey, if they win the toss, Purdue on the road, underdog, they're going to go for two, right? And our defensive coaches got to talk with Dylan Rosiak, who's our team captain, about what play we wanted to call if they got a two-point play. And that ended up, and Pat Bryant, instead of being out for the coin toss, he's on the sideline talking about a scissors route that scored on the first play, right? So how you handle the game is really important, how you manage the game. And thankfully, our guys have listened really well, and they're a fun group to be around.
So congrats on being on the watch list for the National Coach of the Year. 5-1 start. You're ranked 22nd in the country. I think you may not be surprised, Coach Bielema, but I think a lot of people outside the program might be, of how consistent you have been through six games. What are you proudest of with this team specifically, and why do you think they've had the success so far to this point?
Without a doubt, the number one thing, you know, I think the greatest truth comes from kids when they're in the biggest moments on what they do and what they say. And, you know, we've been very fortunate. I think in the last 11 games that have been scored or decided by one score or less, we've won eight, lost three. Of course, I want to win those other three. But, you know, we've won, I believe, four overtime games. The guys, when they talk after the game, they talk about their preparation, prepares them for the moment. you know, we always say it's not what happens, it's how you react to what happens. And our kids really do, in my opinion, show, walk, and talk what they show us during the course of the week. And that's a lot of fun. When you got guys that can listen to what you're saying as coaches, believe in you, right? And sometimes, you know, you got to tell a kid something he doesn't want to hear. And that's when they truly know you love them, right? Is when you are able to tell them the most difficult thing when they don't want to hear it and have them accept it, that's when you've made a connection. And, you know, in this whole world we're living in, you know, you got teams in this league, right, that have $20 million and, you know, we're in the bottom six, not the top six of the 18, right? And I would just tell you, our guys play with a purpose. We have guys that turn down money to go to other places because they want to get put in a position to be successful, not only here, but after here, right? I think we're third or fourth in the league in players put in the NFL over the last 3 years, and I definitely know we're not finishing in the top half in recruiting rankings. So I like the way we produce and talk to our guys and the way they play. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, and it's fun to watch you have all the success you're having, and I think that's got to be something that's attracting kind of more of a national picture as well in terms of recruiting, in terms of all that stuff. Do you recognize that people are really aware of Illinois football a lot more? Certainly than in the last, before you arrived. You've had a couple of really good years. This is going very well thus far.
Well, you know, the part that really jumped out to me, we got done with Penn State, lost a tough one in a tough environment. But, you know, we went on the road the next week, and I was literally from coast to coast. I flew on Sunday to Kansas to a JUCO. I flew to Texas that night to another JUCO. Was in back in Kansas on Monday. Was in Iowa and a couple other states on Tuesday at a high school in Chicago on Tuesday night.
Wow.
And everywhere we went, not just the schools we're going to, but, you know, the guy picking us up at the airport, you know, the guy at the hotel, the person that saw us at lunch at a place, you know, when we grabbed the subway. There's so much more awareness of Illinois when we're not in Illinois, right? They see our logo, they talk about the year. And to be quite honest, the part that I think comes back, you know, if you are who you are every day, it pays tenfold, right? Don't try to be somebody you're not. And what's happening now, you know, case in point, like Hall, right, went to Ball State, was a good player. What happens now is these kids that go to other places, and maybe they don't choose us out of the gate. Maybe they go to another Big Ten school or another conference, or there's a kid that we recruited that maybe we didn't get to that went to a you know, a MAC or a FCS, and now they see us have success and they want to hop in that portal. We take a million kids of the kids that want to be here that can play winning football, right? And now you got this free agency world where kids recognize who you are and what you stand for, and that's the stuff that truly wins out. So I'm really excited about this year, but I'm really excited about what's ahead of us as well.
Have you heard from Russell Wilson?
I get occasional text. It's kind of cool. After the game, we get, you know, feedback from all of our former players. But for me, you know, I'll get, you know, not just from Russ, but also, you know, guys that I coached 15, 20 years ago, right, at other schools, even before I was a head coach. So it's really a fun time. And, you know, I'm super excited for Michigan and the game this Saturday, because I begin to see things now that I had at other places, and you can see it beginning to turn here. I don't want Saturday's game against Michigan to be like this novelty item that never happens. I don't want it to be 20 years before this happens again. I think at Illinois we can make this happen on a more regular basis.
Great stuff.
Great
coach.
Stuff, Coach.
Good
really
luck Saturday.
Appreciate it. Good luck to you.
Appreciate it, gentlemen. ILL.
That ILLINI. I mean, come on. You know what's amazing? Like, I got friends who went to Illinois, obviously. My son's there
now. Your son's there now.
There are so many alums I know who are very fired up about what's going on with the
program. It's a proud year for the football program,
it
no
is.
Doubt about it.
It
he
is.
Has put them exactly where he said he would when he came to Illinois. This is a great year for the Illini.
Yeah. And let's hope that continues.
I just thought maybe tell us if Russell Wilson was starting ahead of Justin Fields. I didn't know. Had to try.
You're unbelievable. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
At this point in time, whether it's Jerry Reinsdorf or a new group that comes in, they will either be getting a new ballpark in Chicago somewhere with a promise, or they will pursue moving this team to Nashville or somewhere else.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is Bruce Levine. He was on yesterday with Rami, and I got to tell you, it is astounding to me that we're even talking about this idea that that Jerry Reinsdorf has indeed decided. Well, I don't know what he's decided, but the report is that he's talking to a group that wants to buy the Chicago White Sox. That is the breaking news from yesterday from The Athletic. The idea that that Jerry has reached a point where he's talking to a group led by Dave Stewart, former major leaguer. Again, you know, it's fascinating to me that
so the timeline of
this would happen
goes back to last December, I believe it was, at the owners' meetings in Nashville, where Jerry Reinsdorf was spotted having a meeting with the Nashville mayor.
Yes.
And then we proceed to late winter, I believe, when we had the renderings and the news that the White Sox were eyeing a patch of land in the South Loop called the 78.
Yep.
And were planning to be an anchor tenant for a $9 billion investment in that neighborhood, and they would be part of that project, and they would build a ballpark there. We got very excited. That was probably the highlight of the season, frankly, if for a season that was record-setting, historic for its futility.
41 now, wins in the entire 41 year.
Wins. And the statement by Jerry Reinsdorf at the end of the year underscored just how disappointed and how fed up he sounded. And basically, it's in that context that we have this news that broke yesterday, that he's in active discussions with a group led by Dave Stewart. Dave Stewart, favorite son of Oakland, former A's pitcher and native of that city. They just lost the A's. Dave Stewart, also part of, as you say, Mully, the group that wants to bring Major League Baseball to Nashville. So the threat is implied without being overt. But the threat is there that if you don't get a stadium, as Bruce suggested, a new stadium in Chicago, White Sox are open for business. Jerry Reinsdorf is considering a sale. The White Sox did not respond because a statement said yesterday to Chicago Sports Network, they don't respond to rumors. And so we are left to speculate. And I think it's fair speculation given all the dots that you're connecting.
Yeah, I mean, listen, again, if you're going to sell the White Sox, are you meeting with one ownership group or are you meeting with as many different ownership groups as humanly possible? Is this a meeting with out-of-town owners, potential movement of the team in order to send a shockwave across the bow so maybe these politicians sit up and really say, yes, we've got to keep them in the 78. Didn't Jerry say that the White Sox would be there for 40 years if they were to build a new
40
stadium?
40-year commitment.
Something like
yes,
that.
Yes, and yeah. I think that is what you remember. And I think that when you talk about this move or this news development, you don't want to refer to it as a ploy, but
no.
It would be a page out of the professional owners, sports owners handbook. This
Certainly.
Is how you create leverage.
Yes. Yes.
This is how you create an implied threat that, well, if I can't get this done, if I can't build this ballpark where we say we want to make a 40-year commitment, okay, we will talk to another group about selling the team and then they can do with it what they choose. Now, I don't know if that's jumping to conclusions or not, but Dave Stewart is not talking to other ownership groups that we're aware of, even though in Minnesota, they have decided the Pollad family that they're going to sell the Twins or explore those possibilities. I don't think they're moving from Minneapolis. They just got a new ballpark there.
Yes. So I don't know how to read it, David. I really don't. I'm curious to know what people think. I think that there's been two reactions from my group of friends. You know, the first reaction was almost euphoric at the idea of a different ownership group coming in, hopefully with money, whatever way you want to term it. And that doesn't fit with what we're talking about here.
Well,
I mean, again, if
you're
you were
euphoric when you read the headline, you're sobered when you read the story.
Well, that's right? The problem, and that's the other element of it that you get, which is they better not move the White Sox, and I don't think anyone wants to see that happen.
No,
but again, I'm just curious why this ownership group, if indeed it's true, and they said. They didn't say the story was false, right? They just said they don't comment on stories like
no
that.
No comment on rumors. The Sun-Times, Daryl Van Scowen this morning, and I think Crane Chicago Business also confirmed that the active discussions or the talks were underway. Now, the other part of this is that, you know, business, like everything else, is involved with the relationships. And relationships are how you have these conversations, how things get started or sparked. And Dave Stewart and Tony La Russa, whose proximity to Jerry Reinsdorf cannot be overlooked here. So Dave Stewart and Tony La Russa have a close relationship. They work together, certainly in Arizona, with the Diamondbacks in the front office. They also have a long history, and they enjoyed success in Oakland together. So you can't overlook that when linking things and why this would come up, because of maybe just a conversation with Dave Stewart or his group. His group also has included in the past, when he's been trying to bring baseball to Nashville, Eddie George, Bob Kendrick, and another real estate developer whose name is less familiar, but he has a group behind him. It would take a lot of money. The White Sox are valued at $2 billion, according to the latest valuation by Forbes. So that's where we are this morning. I don't know how fast or fluid this will. It'll remain fluid. I don't know how fast the things will move now.
Yeah, and again, I would hope that if you know there's more than one billionaire that wants to own an MLB team, and I would hope that you would be willing to find out who that is and how much they'd pay. And you know, it's interesting that you're talking to one group, and that's a group that would presumably want to move the team.
Nashville also could be in the mix for an expansion team if Major League Baseball expands.
Yes.
And that has been a part of the conversation. Rob Manfred has addressed that. You look at Nashville, you look at Portland, you look at Vegas is apparently getting the A's, so they kind of are out of the mix for an expansion team. But other teams have been in line, or other cities have been in line, and you wonder how this affects those conversations as well. They want baseball in the Music City.
Yeah, and that's fine. It's just,
Don't take the White Sox.
No!
Don't take the White Sox.
No.
The White Sox belong on the South Side.
Yeah.
They belong in Chicago.
I mean, they belong in Chicago. Maybe they belong at the 78. Maybe
well, that's still South.
I'm just saying.
South Loop,
wherever,
South Side.
Wherever it is. But see, the problem is that when the White Sox got their building built, it was a last kind of 12th hour type thing, that was because they were threatening to go to Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
So as you say, maybe this is the same playbook. Maybe you're back to, you know, threat. I just don't understand if you were really going to sell the team, why you would talk to one group and not talk to everybody.
Maybe they are. Maybe we're not privy to those details.
If they are, then God bless them.
There are two questions that come to mind, too. Is number one, how is this quest, if you want to call it, or this development related to or affect the Bears looking at the South lot because of the limited amount of money that's available from a public standpoint?
I don't think it's good for the Bears.
Probably not, and I would agree with that. That's good that you answered that quickly, because that was my first reaction too. If the White Sox are more likely to build on the South Loop than the Bears are in the South lot, then it looks like the Bears would be headed to Arlington Heights, which would make sense, which I think we both agree on that. The other part of it is maybe harder to answer and not as obvious, but how does this news development or how does this project affect, if it does, anything that's going on with the White Sox on the field with the roster in the offseason?
Well, now there's a whole world of interesting ideas.
I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it doesn't impact them very much, unless this happens a lot quicker than anyone would realize, right? Because I don't think the budget is going to change. I don't think that there's going to be any mass spending that would go along with trying to make the product more attractive. You know, the thing,
you make it more attractive, or strip it down even more.
But this is the thing: you're selling low here. If you really think it through, If you're selling a team at its worst moment in history and the worst moment of any team in history, I would imagine you're not getting the kind of a profit boost that you would hope to get when you finally do sell the team. Now, maybe that doesn't matter because you bought the team for $20 million and it's worth $2.5 billion. But if, like, let's just say for the sake of snorts and giggles, you could get, you know, $3.7 billion if you built a champion stock. I don't know what that
answer is. Well, I'll tell you what also crossed my mind as you were saying this, and it did earlier as well. This feels like a reaction to this season, right? So if a reaction to the worst season in baseball history. And if you agree with that premise, then this isn't an emotional reaction. I don't think that Jerry Reinsdorf typically makes emotional decisions. So that's what makes you wonder if it is business inspired or this is related to wanting to build the ballpark. And that's when I reference the pro sports owner's playbook or handbook. This is how you create leverage. This would be a successful way to do that if you chose to do that.
Someone was telling me a story about James Dolan yesterday where the fan base was cheering, fire the coach, fire the coach. And he was sitting there and the next day gave him like a 4-year extension, 5-year extension. I will show them. Is Jerry the kind of guy who, if people are chanting, sell the team, he decides, well, I'm going to show them, I'll sell it to someone more. I don't think he'd do that.
I don't sense that's the case
I don't think he'd do that.
I don't either.
And the tone of the letter he sent out and the things that he said is different than what he's talking about, what we're talking about, if indeed you would sell to an out-of-town ownership group that wants out of town. I just think there's got to be some Chicago billionaire out there that has enough money to buy the team and help finance a stadium for his team.
We got a break, but this is something to think about. Does Jerry Reinsdorf want that to be part of his legacy?
The guy grew up a Brooklyn Dodgers.
He was a fan of the Trolley Dodgers. Is it naive to think that he doesn't want that to be part of his legacy? Because I don't think you want to be the owner that sells the team to an ownership group that moves the White Sox out of Chicago.
Well, it's one of two things. You either want the most money you can get for the team, and then you're willing to take the hit to your legacy, or you're gonna sell the team to somebody. If you're going to sell it for $2.5 million, is there someone that would keep it here?
Keep it here? I hope so.
I hope so, too.
If they want to do that.
All right, we've got a lot going on. We're going to get to our guy Nick Kostos next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
I want winners.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. On the line is the host of You Better You Bet, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, Nick Kostos. Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. Also, be sure to listen to the You Better You Bet podcast for more analysis. Just search You Better You Bet wherever you find your podcasts. And Nick joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Nick, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, guys? How are we doing today?
Doing well.
We're wondering how Sean Payton is doing and what is the revenge in his heart, and how do the fine people of New Orleans feel about him?
Well, I would say that they should like him since he brought them the only Super Bowl in franchise history, but obviously like not the best ending the way that went down a couple of years ago. So revenge game coming up tonight, Broncos and the Saints, Thursday night football in New Orleans. And guys, there's been like huge betting movement on this game. Literally in the last like half hour, I've had the screen up the whole time. Denver is now a 3-point road favorite in this game at the New Orleans Saints. Now, in case people have missed this, Derek Carr is not going to play tonight. Spencer Rattler, the rookie, is going to start for the Saints, and New Orleans going to be without both of its top two receivers. Chris Olave concussed on Sunday, and unfortunately, the speedster Rashid Shaheed might miss the rest of the season with a meniscus injury, and that's why we've seen Denver be bet out to 3. And honestly, like I think that move is right. I've been saying the last couple days on my show, like anything below 3, I think is a bet for the Denver Broncos. So right now at current prices, I don't think there's anything to do, but I do have a couple long shot anytime touchdown bets if the people are interested.
We are very interested. Prop King.
Okay, so without delving too deep into the weeds here, this is a great anytime touchdown game because Denver spreads the ball around to so many different players. They don't have like one dominant player on the offense or even two guys that get the ball all the time. And all the injuries in New Orleans receiving corps create opportunities for us. So I'm going to give people a couple names that we should be targeting. These can be first touchdown scorers also if you want a juicier price. For Denver, two wide receivers, and like I'm not saying bet all these guys, just giving you some names to consider. Troy Franklin is a rookie. He played collegially at Oregon with Bo Nix. He caught a touchdown last week. He's plus 450. Devon Vele is a seventh-round rookie for the Broncos. He led the team in targets this past weekend. Vele is plus 500 for the Denver Broncos. Audric Estime is a name that I think your fan base might know, right? Played running back at Notre Dame the last couple years. He made his season debut last week. He ran well for the Broncos. Estime is plus 600 to score. I'll be betting Estime to score the last touchdown of the game tonight also at 35-1. And how about Lucas Kroll? He's Denver's new starting tight end. Got three targets last week. He's 8-1 to score a touchdown tonight. And again, first or last touchdown if you want to boost those up. And a couple names for New Orleans and the receiving core to consider. Again, the top two guys are out. You may not know who these people are, but they're going to play a lot for the Saints tonight. Mason Tipton is a rookie out of Yale. He's plus 475 to score tonight. And Cedric Wilson is plus 550. They will be two of New Orleans' three starting wide receivers in this game.
Nick, I'm curious. There's a couple of big battles in the NFC North, the biggest of which is Detroit at Minnesota without Hutchinson. What do you think of that game?
Yeah, I like the Lions if I had to bet the game. I also like the over, guys, and it's been bet up to 50.5. You know, Aiden Hutchinson is obviously a huge loss for Detroit, so Minnesota's offense should be able to have success here against the Hutchinson-less Lions defense. But on the flip side here, Jared Goff in his couple meetings against the Brian Flores-coordinated Vikings defense, which blitzes all the time, 77 dropbacks for Goff in his last two meetings against the Brian Flores defense. 57 times he's been blitzed on those 77 dropbacks. 84% adjusted completion percentage, over 500 passing yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. Mm-hmm. I think Ben Johnson has this defense figured out. I think both teams are going to score in the game. Make me pick a winner on Mully, and I will take the Lions, but I think we see a lot of points scored on Sunday. I like the over in the game as well.
How about Steelers-Jets? That's got some intriguing storylines. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like this is like the heterosexual version of Brokeback Mountain because I just can't quit the Jets. I bet them every week. Every week I lose. It's absolutely terrible. And I'm going to go back to the well with them this week. Look, Russell Wilson's going to start a quarterback for the Steelers, we think. And I don't think Russ has it going at all. He hasn't had it going for a couple of years here. I kind of don't understand this move by Mike Tomlin. Devontae Adams is going to make a season debut for the Jets. And maybe this is one of those games. Steelers win by three. They win the turnover battle. And after the game, I'm stuck wondering again, why the hell did I bet the Jets. It is worth noting, three of the Jets' losses this season, not Monday night, week one against San Francisco, by a combined 10 points. I think the Jets are better. I'll do it again, and maybe I'll make a mistake again. Give me the Jets on Sunday night.
Wow. I did not expect a 2005 film reference, but Brokeback Mountain, that's always good, always fun. Nick, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Nick.
Got it. Wishing you guys and all your listeners minimal sweats when he bets. The absolute very best of luck.
That was the host of You Better You Bet, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, Nick Costo. Nick Costo's insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app.
Looking forward to Baldy's breakdown of the Bears because they're 4-2 heading into the bye week, and he has broken down the tape.
That's right. When we'll talk to him next, Mully and Haw on the Score.